someday, long from now, we thank you so much, so very much. Keep at it. When will you see Cam Floria? In June, when you go to the thing, I'll see you then, too. But tell Cam hello for me when you get there. I want to talk to you about a person in your life. All of you have at least one of these people in your life, and if you're real lucky, you have a couple. But this is a person that irritates you to death. If this is a person that always says the wrong thing, this is the person that bugs the very dickens out of you, this is a person that never is on the same side of any issue that you are ever on, and I am not talking about the person that you follow along on the freeway that cuts in and out, or a person on the job that just drives you to distraction. I am not talking about somebody in school that bugs you to death. I'm not talking about a teacher or somebody like that. I'm not talking about a friend, because you can drop friends. If friends, you know, cool you, well, you can never take them out to lunch or something, you know. I'm not talking about a pastor that may have said something that wounded your feelings. I am not talking about some ugly lady at your church. I'm talking about a person in your life, and the horriblest part about it is you are always related to this person. Now, maybe some of you don't have a person like this, but I suspect as I talk, you will form some pictures. I'm talking about a father, a mother, a brother, a sister, a husband, a wife, a sister-in-law, a brother-in-law, a mother-in-law, a father-in-law, somebody that we're related to that bugs the very bones out of us, you know. We just can't stand them. Now, I never knew what those kind of people were called in our lives, and I particularly never dreamed that Christians had one of those or two in their lives until I realized that I had somebody like that in my life. And I was horrified because, number one, I thought nobody else had somebody like this. Nobody else would understand if I said I had somebody like this. And so I began whispering very quietly, do you have anybody in your life? I talked to a friend. Do you have anybody in your life that bugs the dickens out of you? Yes, I certainly do. Who is it? Well, you're never going to believe this, but it's my sister, or it's my mother, and really? No kidding. And I didn't know what this kind of a person was called, and I didn't know if there was even a name for it, but I began talking with more and more people, and I ventured out more and more. Do you have a person that necessarily you don't like very much? Which is putting it mildly. And yes, they did. Yes, they really did, only they never told anybody. Never talked about it, because you're not supposed to not like them. You're supposed to love them. And in case of your mother or father, you're supposed to honor them. 10 commandments, the 10 biggies. And so I didn't know what they were called until I watched a movie on television. Television isn't all bad, 98%, but not all. But I was watching this movie, and the movie was called The Summer of My German Soldier. It's been run twice now. And I taped it the last time it ran with my little tape recorder, and then had my secretary write out the script at one part for me that I really wanted to really have before me. Because in this movie, they named this person. They put a name on this person. And I put a handle on it, and it was an enormous help to have a handle, a name on this person. In The Summer of My German Soldier, this is a story based on a true incident that happened in the 1940s. I didn't know it, but during the 40s, they brought several hundred German prisoners from Germany, put them into concentration camps in the South, in Georgia, Alabama, and sprinkled them over the South. And they sprinkled them in little groups of 10 to 20 soldiers. The story is about a family called the Bergens. They are Jewish people. They have a 14-year-old daughter named Patty. And into their town comes this contingency of 20 young German soldiers. one escapes. And one escapes to the Bergen farm barn. And this Patty, who is 14, goes up and discovers him. And she doesn't know about wars. She doesn't know about the Jewish persecution. She doesn't know anything except that this is a young kid. He's a boy, and he's scared, and he's running away. She puts it all two and two together. Oh, this is one of the prisoners, and she saw him in town when he was with the others. And she doesn't know what she should do. Should she turn him in, or should she keep him? But he seems so harmless. And he speaks English with an accent, but he speaks English, and he begins to talk to her, and she begins to talk to him. And they end up where she hides him out for 3-4 weeks. She gets Ruth, their black cook and their maid, to help with food, and nobody knows about it except Ruth and this Patty. And a love story starts to involve. She is given some self-worth by this boy, and he tells her she's a special girl. And they portray the mother as being very, very ambivalent. Nothing outstanding. But they portray the father as sort of nice sometimes and sort of not nice other times, which is very, very true to life. You know, nobody is all bad 100% of the time. Well, except maybe your mother. I can hear you teenagers talking to me. I'm kidding. I'm really kidding. We are black and white, and we are gray, and we move from being perfectly contemptible to just darling. And we switch roles. And many times in a television movie or in a regular movie or in a book or in a play, the characters are all, he's the mad, mad man, and she's the sweet, darling princess, and he's the handsome prince, and we're stereotyped into people. Well, real people aren't like that. They have all kinds of areas. And this television movie was really good at portraying this father as sort of nice, and then he wasn't nice. He whipped this 14-year-old girl, and for what I didn't think was really valid reasoning. And besides that, she was 14, and you don't do that to a past 10 or even maybe even younger than that. You take away the car keys, you take away privileges, but you don't put them over your knee and spank them. And he whipped her with his belt and everything else, and then he would turn around, and then he would be halfway nice. Well, the FBI keeps searching this area, and finally they narrow it down to this guy's got to be close. And, of course, he sees the FBI coming, and he runs, and the FBI goes off into the night chasing him. About 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, the FBI comes to the Bergen house, knocks on the door, and they've got in their hand the shirt that this young German soldier was wearing. The shirt has the initials of the father on it, and that's how they trace it back to it's got to be the Bergen house. It's a shirt that she has given him, the daughter has given him, to wear instead of his prison outfit. And they take this shirt, they go into the Patty's bedroom, they wake her up, and they throw this blood-stained bullet hole shirt on top of her face, and they wake her up. And she looks at it, and they ask her if she knows who owns that shirt, and she doesn't have to say. Her face is just a mass of horror. He's dead, and there's the blood, and there's the bullet hole, and everything else. Now, they take her to court, and the court remands her into the custody of her father. And the scene that absolutely blew me away was when the father comes up to the daughter's room. She's rocking in a chair. She's in complete shock. She's staring straight ahead, and he comes in, and he asks her to come down for dinner. Her mother would like her to come down, and she just won't commit to him or anything. She's in a state of shock, and he begins talking to her. And it's innocent enough at first. He says, I spoke to Mr. Levy in Corona, a lawyer, and he will represent you in the hearing, you being a minor, and then you'll be remanded to our custody, and your mother's and mine until you're 18. And according to Mr. Levy, you're not legally a traitor. And then he says, I remember the day you were born. And he changes. And I'm not an actress enough to do what he did with his face. But he said, I remember the day you were born. It was the saddest day of my life. Your Grandma Bergen, mean and stingy with her affection. Oh, there was plenty of love for my daddy and for Mert and my brother, but not too Dillis, not a little bit for me. And then there you were, looking just like her, just like her. I knew right away you were going to be just like her. I knew it, and I knew you hated me. You see, I knew the very first day. I never, in all of my dreams, never did I think you'd go this far. You gave my shirt to that Nazi. And she says, but you never even took out the pins. And he says, when I saw my initials, my very own initials, all covered with that Nazi's blood, And then Sharon came along, that's her little sister, all pale and pretty and new. And I thought it'd be all right. We could still be a good family, but you hated me so much. And I couldn't stand the way you hated me. I could hardly stand to look at you. In fact, I still can't stand to look at you. I never will. You're a bad person, Patricia. But you're a Bergen, so I'll do what's called for now. I know I can't legally cleanse my hands of you. The law can't legally call you a traitor. But you've done enough and all you can to hurt me. And a person can only stand so much. A man can only try so hard for so long. And Patty says, I never meant to hurt you. And he says, you live in this house till it's time for you to go. But you live here with my wife and my daughter, Sharon. But you, girl, you are dead to me. Oh, I never talk to television sets. But I'll tell you, I was up on my feet. I was screaming, don't you dare talk to her that way. You're going to cripple her. You're going to. And then I realized what it was. I have heard some of those words in my own childhood. I have my own person. And I thought, oh, that's why I'm identifying. Don't say those things to her. Don't. Please don't. The movie takes the most unusual turn at that point. And she runs out of the house. Patty runs out, goes down into the black part of town, goes and finds Ruth. And she opens the door, and she comes in, and she says, oh, listen to what they said. Listen to this. I don't know what to think of it. Why doesn't my dad love me? Why doesn't my mother love me? What is this? What happened? And she tells her what the father said. And Ruth opens up her arms and takes this little girl into her arms and holds her, and then the best screenwriting I've ever heard in my life happened right then, because Ruth says, now you listen to me. When I go shopping and I see something that's marked irregular, I knows that I'm not going to have to pay full price. Now your folks, they are irregular, and you have been paying top dollar all of your life to them. You don't do that anymore, girl. You lift your head up. You put your shoulders back. You get person pride and God pride. And you go home. And you be the girl you're supposed to be. Now listen to me, honey. You and I, we're regular. They ain't. But we are. Now you go home and you be the person God wants you to be. I just stood there and I thought, so that's what they're called. Irregular people. Irregular people. Now, I don't know if you've got irregular people in your life. I do in mine. It is not my husband. It's not my children. But it is a relative. It's not Lori. Honey, you want to stand up and say that?
Yes, not me.
Oh, she's a delight. It is someone that I am related to, and it is someone close. And by the time this evening is over, you may guess who it is. It is not my intention to wound, to heal. I have worked through my bitterness. I have worked through my hurt. And it is not my intention to judge or to bring any condemnation to this person. I want very much to share with you some of the facts. If you guess who it is, you don't need to tell me about it. We will just both know. And I will share with you, and you can share with me. And I would really like your input, because next week I begin a book on the irregular people. And I need to hear from you. I need to hear whether I'm on target or not. I need to hear whether this is true or not. And I need to know whether the things that I say about the irregular person are right or not, because nobody is writing about the irregular person. And psychologists, the only thing they say to people with irregular people in their family is, put some distance between you and that person. And that won't work if your irregular person is your husband. And that won't work if it's your daughter that's still in your home. So I need to have input from you, and I will be happy to listen. If you want to write me a note and give it to me about, or you have an experience that you wouldn't mind sharing with me, I don't need your name, but I need just the facts of who your irregular person is and what is the relationship. The irregular people in the Bible, did you know they had them? Who was Cain's irregular person? His brother. Sarah and Hagar, her maid, they were irregular persons. They weren't exactly related, except that they both had a baby by Abraham. Rachel, sisters, Rachel and Leah, they were irregular people to each other, fighting. And sometimes this is nonverbal, and that's almost the worst kind. Nonverbal abuse leaves invisible scars. If a woman is married to an irregular husband and he beats her or he sexually abuses her children, she leaves him like that if she gets help, and if she can be convinced to leave. I mean, many times they stay, but if she can be, and nobody condemns her. But if the abuse is verbal, it leaves the invisible scars, and nobody understands why this marriage isn't working. I mean, it looks great. It looks fine. You know, we have two images, one public and one private. The private image is a long way from the public image, and she can't leave him because nobody knows about all the scars, all the invisible scars, that verbal abuse or nonverbal, not saying anything, never saying the right thing, never being at the right place at the right time. Jesus had irregular people in his life. He must have. Who of the disciples do you think was his irregular person? Judas? That's interesting. But I don't think that. I think I heard it over here. Peter. You betcha. He's a perfect example. Joseph had 10 half-brothers that were his irregular people. 10 of them. Count them on your fingertips. 10. 10 who hated his guts. Hated him so much that they were going to kill him. They were finally talked out of that, so they did the next nicest thing, which was throw him in a dry pit. Then after that, they did the third nicest thing, which was sell him as a slave. Are you kidding? This guy was hated. He had irregular people in his life. Everybody has them. I was speaking not long ago at a pastor's wives conference, and I began talking about the irregular person. And a woman wrote me a note, said I could share this. She said, my irregular person is my dear pastor husband. I relate to you and your experiences, not quite as severe, but it's so hard to take. He gave me no gifts, even at Christmas. He never gave a card. There were no words of appreciation, no thanks. But he is so good and kind and sweet to our church family. Always he has time for the church. Always he has time for the congregation. But he has had never any time for me. And in the past, never any time for our sons. They are both married now. I'm going home to work on the resentments I have. Thank you for sharing. I'm glad you're going to write this book. You have ministered to my hurts today. Thank you very much. My irregular person. Let me tell you some things about an irregular person, because they fit some patterns. An irregular person always says the wrong thing. at the wrong time. And the problem with having an irregular person, because we are related, means that every Christmas and every Thanksgiving and every family picnic and all of this time, we've got to be together. And we've got to endure these wonderful, happy, happy times. And if you're a regular person as your mother, you've got to send her a gift and you go to the card rack. Hallmark is absolutely famous for the variety of Mother's Day cards. You go there and you start reading and it doesn't apply. And this one doesn't apply. No, my mother isn't sweet. No, I had a woman say to me the other day, she never understood why her mother was her irregular person and why she really disliked her mother. Her mother is the pillar of the church and the Bible study teacher. She said, it occurred to me that every time I've seen my mother in the last 15 years, my mother says to me, when your brothers left home a few years ago, I had nothing more to live for. Weird. But true. They always say the wrong thing. And it's at family conferences, at family picnics, at funerals, at weddings, at births, at showers, that this all comes to a screeching head and festers like a boil. And you think, if I have to stand next to that person one more minute, I'm going to kick them in the shins. I'm going to just punch their lights out. I cannot stand this, and that person is nice to everybody else in the room but you. Have you ever noticed that? The irregular person in your life may not be the irregular person to anybody else in all of life. A young woman, 34 years of age, had discovered she had breast cancer. She had all the tests, and it was determined that the following Tuesday, she would go and have a mastectomy. It was cancer, it was malignant. She had never been able to talk to her mother. Her mother had always loved her sister, always catered to her sister, always talked with her sister, never with her. And she didn't know why. She never knew what happened. She never understood it. But it was always her sister. Her sister's baby was cuter. Her sister's figure was darlinger. Her sister's hair was prettier. Her sister's makeup and complexion was more marvelous than anybody in the whole world, including the other daughter. This young woman said, I wanted to tell my mother that I had cancer, and I wanted to tell her that I was afraid. And I wanted her to pray with me like she had prayed with my sister so many times. So she said, I called her, and I told her I had something very serious to talk with her about, and could I take her to lunch? They went to lunch, and she couldn't bring it up all during lunch. They got through with lunch, and they were on the way home. She was driving the car, and she said, Mother, you know, I've had a number of tests at the hospital. Her mother said, yes. And she said, the final result is that on Tuesday, I will have a mastectomy. Mother, it's malignant. The lumps that they did see are, the biopsy shows that it's malignant. And I'm going to have a mastectomy, and I'm afraid, I'm scared, I don't know what to think. And her mother said, you know, your sister has a recipe for chicken enchiladas, and it really is delicious, and I have been meaning to give it to you. And she said, I gripped the steering wheel, and I nearly ran into the car ahead of me, and I tensed up, and I said to her as calmly as I could, Mother, I have cancer, and I'm afraid that I'm going to die with it. And all you have to say is a recipe of, and she named her sister's name. And her mother said, don't talk to me in that tone of voice. I have taught you respect. Don't talk to me in that tone of voice. Well, now she's screaming. And talk about tone of voice. Now she is screaming. She pulls the car over the curb and she says, I just told you that I think I'm dying. And you're telling me about this enchilada recipe. Don't you hear me? And her mother said, and what's more, if you leave the enchiladas in the oven too long, they dry out and they get very hard, and you don't want to do that with this recipe. Now she said to me, what is the matter with this woman? This is my mother. She's a Christian. I wanted her to pray with me, and she gave me an enchilada recipe. I said, she's hard of hearing. They all are. Irregular people can't hear. And I'm not kidding. They can't hear. Now, they can hear other people. In this case, she could hear the girl's sister, but she couldn't hear this daughter. Irregular people are very hard of hearing. They can't hear. My irregular person in my life always says the wrong thing, doesn't know me, although I've known him all my life. He doesn't know what my favorite dessert is. I doubt that he knows the color of my eyes. I don't think he understands anything about my work. He calls my coming to Hume Lake all that running around. And he says, when are you going to quit it? When are you going to stop all that running around? He has never read my books. And we have never talked about writing, which is my favorite thing to talk about. When he comes to my house, we talk about the book he is writing. We talk about the book that he's creating. We talk about his love for the writer Johnny Erickson and how she is the best Christian writer in the world today and how he's patterning his writing after her because she's the best. My irregular person doesn't ever hear me either. And what's more, my irregular person is blind, and so is yours. They're blind to you. My irregular person can see talent in every single human being on earth, but me. My irregular person told me not too long ago, you should hear Mrs. Brown play. Mrs. Brown plays the piano, and I mean, she doesn't just play the piano. Mrs. Brown can hear a song once or a chorus, and she can sit down and she can play it just like that. And I said, I have been able to do that since I've been 11 years old. No, he says, not like Mrs. Brown. And then I have a very, very beautiful home. My husband is a banker. And we've been moved to Palm Springs area, and we live in Rancho Mirage. And we live in a very pretty house. If I lose it tomorrow, if it burns or it's flooded out, if it's gone tomorrow, it will not jar my heart for more than a couple of hours. But I'm going to be very jarred for a couple of hours. Once when the fire was coming down in our old house, and the fire was coming down the canyon, and it was coming down closer and closer and closer to our property, Lori and I were sitting out on the curb, and she said, as fire trucks, the bombers were coming over, the Bore 8 bombers were dropping stuff, and we were watching this fire come down, and the sprinklers were on in the house, and she said to me, how do you really feel, Mom? How do you really feel about the fire and everything? Do you remember that? We were sitting out there, and just sitting on a curb, watching the fire burn closer and closer down the canyon. And I was really spiritually up to the occasion. I said, listen, Lori, when I got up this morning, I said, Lord, whatever you want to do in my life today, it's all right. I didn't mean fire, but, you know, it's all right, Lord, and I'm really, really happy about it. And I said, and I really feel good about the Lord's will. But also, I would like very much to throw up right now. Anyway, I live in a very beautiful house, and if it was gone tomorrow, I hold things lightly since I lost our son, David. Everything is very precious to me in my house. But, and I decorated it all, and I upholstered chairs, and I made drapes, and I did all those wonderful, fun things. And I've got baskets in a French country kitchen that I made that are baskets filled with gorgeous, gorgeous silk flowers and dried flowers and baby's breath and dried breath. And they're all over one whole wall and beautiful, beautiful. It's a beautiful place, and I like it, and I love it. But it's not my salvation. It's not my hope. It's not my God. It is a place that I live in, and I love it. But Dick and I wallpapered it all. I decorated it all. And when I took my irregular person through this house, I said, finally, there was nothing said, so I finally said, do you like my house? Do you like it at all? And my irregular person said, real nice, uh-huh. You should see the Ferguson's house. Now, the Ferguson's house, he built it for Mrs. Ferguson, and it cost him $40,000. $40,000. And I'm thinking, you can't buy half of a garage in Rancho Mirage for $40,000. And he says, and the best part about it is, they wallpapered it themselves, she upholstered the furniture, she decorated it, and now that's a beautiful house. My irregular person is blind, hard of hearing, always says the wrong thing. A few years ago, when Rick was going to get married, 4 months before the wedding, I said to my irregular person, Rick is marrying this fabulous girl. Her name is Teresa, and they're going to be married in August. And I want you to put it on your calendar now so you can come. My irregular person said, August what? And I said, the 18th. And he said, oh, we can't. We have a church picnic. And I said, hey, wait a minute. It's 4 months away, and you can change the picnic. Oh, no. No. Can't change the picnic. We just won't be able to be there. And I lost every semblance of order in my life. One of the fruits of the Spirit is self-control. I did not have an ounce of self-control. It was unthinkable to me that this person in our life would not go to this very special boy. I began to scream. I said, this is not a high school dropout. This kid is not mean and ugly. This kid loves the Lord with all of his heart, and so does the girl he's marrying. This kid is going to be a marvelous man of God. And his wedding is 4 months away, and you can't cancel a picnic. And he said, no. And he got calm and smiley. And I began to yell more. I began to cry more. My adrenaline, my heart was pounding right up through my throat. And I realized that he was not hearing me. Now, I was screaming at the top of my voice, and he wasn't hearing me. And all of a sudden, he walked over to Lori and he said, don't you wish your mother was as cool and calm as I am? And she was just sobbing. The tears were just coming down her face. And I don't think she even answered him. And he wasn't listening. And I thought, I'm speaking in Chinese, and he's answering me in Swahili. And nothing is happening here. Now, he's a Christian. Been a Christian for many, many years, and I know how I can make him listen. I know what word to say. And I don't say this. This isn't my vocabulary. Not even when the worst things go wrong do I say this word. But I know it gets his attention. It is not profanity. It does not take the name of the Lord in vain. It's just a word. And I said it, and please don't be offended when I use the word now. And I'm not using it to shock an audience or anything else. It's not even really that bad. But I want you to get the importance of what happened. I knew I couldn't get him to hear me. And so I said, damn it, listen to me. And he turned around. And he was speechless that I would use this word. And then he walked over and try and get this, because I haven't gotten it yet. He walked over, took his thumb, whipped it across the bottom lip of my lipstick, and he said, anybody that wears this stuff doesn't know the Lord. And I said, I thought we settled that 30-some years ago. Don't know the Lord, and you better get right with God, or you're going to go. You know where you're going to go, but you're not right with God. I don't know how we got from Rick's wedding to my spiritual condition, but it was the word. It was the word, damn it. And he stood back, and he just could not believe that I was talking to him in this tone of voice. And finally I went to the front door, and I opened it up, and I said, please go, please. I'm talking in another language, you're listening in another language, and we're not communicating. We have a communication problem. And he said, you're throwing me out. And I said, no, I just can't talk to you. And he went, closed the door, and I went into the living room. Lori came in. We sat and we just sobbed and sobbed. We cried and we cried and we cried. And Rick came in and he said, what's the matter? Phlegmatic Rick. Phlegmatic Dick. Came in, what's the matter? Little IBM computer, you know, you slip the card in. I said, well, so-and-so isn't coming to your wedding. He said, who needs him? I said, I need him. I need him very much. I need him. He says to Lori, have you called Dad? She says, no, she won't let me. She said she's going to handle this on her own. He disappears, and 10 minutes later, Dick walks in. All right, what's the matter? Well, so-and-so's not coming to the wedding. That's okay. He's very low-keyed about it, and I said, no, it isn't. It's painful. This has happened to me all my life. He didn't come to my high school graduation. He didn't almost come to my wedding. He didn't come to my baby's funeral. He has never been anywhere at the right moment for me, but for everybody else, yes. He's glorious to other people. He's at the drop of a hat, at the minute of a phone call, at the suggestion of a card or a letter, he's with somebody else, not with me. And I was broken in spirit and hurting and sure that nobody else had an irregular person in their life whatsoever. And I dashed off a note to a friend of mine, and at the P.S. I ended and said, guess what my person has done to me now? He's not coming to Rick's wedding. And I sent the letter off. And 2 days later, I got this letter back from my friend. It was the turning point of my life. He says, I am more convinced every day that a great portion of our adult effort is invested in the quest for that which was unreachable in childhood. The more painful the early void, the more we are motivated to fill it later in life. Your irregular person never met the needs that he should have. And I still think you're still hoping that he will miraculously become what he has never been. Therefore, he constantly disappoints you and hurts you and in the end rejects you. I think you will be left vulnerable to pain when you accept the fact that he cannot, nor will he ever, provide the love and empathy and interest that he should. It's not easy to insulate yourself this way, but it hurts less to expect nothing than to always hope in vain. Always hoping for this person to change. It hurts less to expect nothing. I would guess that your irregular person's own childhood experiences account for his emotional peculiarities and can perhaps be viewed as his own unique handicap. For instance, if he were blind, you would love him despite his lack of vision. In a sense, he is blind. He is blind to your needs. He is unaware of the hurt behind the incidents and disagreements, the funeral of your baby, the disinterest in all the things you do, your other accomplishment, and now Rick's wedding. His handicap makes it impossible for him to perceive your feelings in anticipation. Now, if you can accept him as a man with a permanent handicap, one which was probably caused when he was young and vulnerable, you will shield yourself from the ice pick of his rejection. I know all about the ice pick. I know all about it. A young woman said to me, I heard you talking about the irregular person, and she said, I'm 31 years of age. She said, my irregular person is my father. And she said, every night of my life, I lay on my bed. I am married and I have two children. She said, I lay on my bed and on my pillow and I cry and I soak my pillow every night because I want so desperately for my dad's approval. And she said, I sat here listening to you say, the irregular person, the handicapped person, they're blind, they can't hear, they probably won't change. And she said, I said to myself, I choose never to cry about this again. I choose to live my life, to be the wife to my husband that God wants me to be, to stop crying for daddy's approval. And I said to her, you know what you really want? You don't want daddy's approval. You want healing. And you've taken the first steps to healing. The first step is a choice you have to make. Are you willing? Oh, no, it's too hard. The irregular person is the kind that never apologizes. They never are responsible for anything going wrong. It is always someone else. You ever drive with one of these people in a car? Every single thing that happens on the highway out in front, out on the sides, and out on the back is due to some other klutzy driver. It is never their fault. They can't apologize. They can never take the responsibility for making a mistake. I've never heard my irregular person ever say, I blew it. Never heard him say, I'm sorry. I am so pleased with my husband because my husband's a strong man, a stubborn German man, very nonverbal. But, oh, I have had 4 or 5 occasions in my life when he's come to me and said, Joyce, I did such and such. Mostly it's I said such and such, and I want you to know I'm sorry. And I don't intend to do that ever again. That's a real apology. Writing letters to people and saying, if in the 30 years I've known you, if I have ever hurt you or said anything that wounded you, please forgive me. That is not an apology. Absolutely worthless. No, it does harm. Because the other person thought you were a wonderful person all 30 years, and now they wonder, yeah, I wonder what she didn't say about me. It's like going to somebody and saying, I have always been jealous of you, but I'm over it now. You never like that person afterwards. I have that happen to me almost on a monthly basis. Someone comes to me and says, I always hated you. I always was so jealous of you, but the Lord's worked it through and I'm not anymore. And what am I supposed to do? Hug them and say, mwah, 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 you wonderful girl. No, it doesn't do anything to me except wound my spirit a little bit, and I'd rather not know about it. An apology is an apology when it said, last Tuesday, I was talking about you, Sharon, and I said such and such, and I was wrong. I should have never voiced my opinion, or I didn't tell it the way it should have come out. I said it wrong, and I want you to know that I am sorry, and I will never do it again. Now, that's an apology. It was last Tuesday, or it was last Wednesday, or it was whenever. When I got my friend's letter, my husband said to me, what are you going to do about the bridal shower for Teresa next week? Because my irregular person would be there, and his wife, and what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know. I don't want to see him. I don't want to talk to him. And Dick said to me, who's the healthy one here, and who's sick? Well, I'm not going to say I'm the sick one, that's for sure. Now, if you're going to be helping, you got to apologize. There's an old-fashioned word. It's called forgiveness. So who's going to say I'm sorry? Not him. So who's going to do it if we're going to be healthy? Got to be me. What can I apologize for? I am not sorry for anything I said, with the exception of the word damn it. So, but I couldn't get his attention any other way, so I was really justified in using that word, and it did get his attention. So I say, okay, I prayed about it. I said, I know what I'll say. So I went to the shower, and it was really painful. His wife sat over here, and I sat over there, and she would not look at me. She would not talk to me. She sat like that. So I went to her after the shower, and I said, I want to tell my irregular person, except I didn't call him that. That crummy man you live with. My God. I said, would you give him a message for me? And she said, oh, yes, I would be happy to. And I said, I want you to know that I am very sorry for the way we had that awful confrontation, for the way it happened, for the manner in which I spoke. I am very sorry about the way I spoke. Now, see, I didn't say I was sorry for what I said. I said I was sorry for the way I said it. And she said, oh. And I said, will you forgive me? And she said, oh, I forgive you. I forgive you. I forgive you. So I wait, because now she's going to say, and honey, I'm sorry too. But it doesn't come. She's slightly irregular. And I never heard, I'm sorry too. I just heard, I forgive you. Magnificent magnitude of this wonderful thing, I forgive you. God himself couldn't have said it better. So 2 days later, I get this letter. It's from my irregular person. And would you believe that it said, since you have apologized for your terrible behavior, we are coming to the wedding. And when they came, they told 400 people at the in the reception line that they made this wonderful boy possible. Irregular people are insensitive to your emotional needs. They say, I love you to other people, but not to you. Now, along about this time, a Christian counselor says, why don't you just have a loving confrontation? So much can be achieved in a loving confrontation, and I believe in loving confrontations. I have had a loving confrontation with my son-in-law not too long ago, and it was without a doubt the most beautiful thing I've ever had. He had some serious grievances that he had to bring me, and he brought them to me in great love. We talked about them, and then he said, could I pray with you about this? And I said, oh, yes. And he prayed this marvelous prayer. And the healing was so beautiful. And then before he left, I said, can I pray with you? And he's 6'3" or 6'4", and he put his big arms around me. I was smothered. Put his big arms around me, and I prayed with him. It was a loving confrontation, and it was gorgeous. And things like that do work. But I'm not sure that they work with the irregular person in your life for this reason. After I got several letters from women who said, have a loving confrontation with your irregular person. You say things so well. You say them so beautifully. You say he's never said, I love you right out. So you go to him and you say, I love you. And then you just melt him with your way with words. Well, it's worth a try. So I wait to the perfect occasion, and then I say to this person, it was Christmas, I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. Put my hands up on his shoulders. Lock my hands around him. I'm eyeball to eyeball. Noses are about that far apart. And I say, I want to wish you a blessed new year. And I really want you to know, I do love you. And see, this only happened a couple of years ago. So I can now say this. And I have worked through a lot of anger and a lot of hostility and bitterness and all that. So I can honestly say this. So I say it. And I finish with a flourish. I love you very much. And he says, breaks away. He slaps me on the shoulder and he says, two-way street. I said, what? And he said, two-way street. And he walked away from me. Isn't that sad? That's as close as he could come to saying, I love you. Now, that's all right. He's handicapped, he's blind, he's hard of hearing, he will never change. And it's all right. I'm making allowances for him because Paul says, we are to make allowances for each other's what? Faults. And if this isn't a fault, I don't know what is. A Christian psychologist wrote in a book, I've never read anybody who's talked about the irregular person, but he came close. He was talking about a girl who could never talk to her mother. She was 26 years of age. So he wrote about this girl and how she couldn't talk to her mother without getting angry. So he suggested to her that she call her mother and have a very loving confrontation. She calls her mother, sets up an appointment, and she goes to talk with her mother. And wonder of wonders, she gets through the whole afternoon without any arguments between them, and she's just thrilled. And then her mother says to her, well, is there anything that I did with your sisters that maybe you wanted to do with me that you never got to do? And she said, yes, you always bake pies with my sister, and so I want you to bake some pies with me. So they went out to the kitchen and they baked pies. And this author says, and during the afternoon after the pies were baked, 26 years of walls being built between them came down, and they were reunited in God's love. And I think, and Alice walks through the looking glass into Wonderland. Because you can't have a loving confrontation with somebody who says, I have no problem. You have a problem. Well, I don't. You better take care of your problem. You need help. I don't need any help. I don't have a problem. Do you? Yes, I have a problem. I can't talk to you. Oh, just in your head. But I can't say anything to you, and you don't say anything back to me. I certainly do. You've got that all wrong. You don't know the facts, Joyce. You just don't know the facts. You cannot have a confrontation with an irregular person most of the time because they don't have a problem. They don't have any problem at all in that way. They never know where you're coming from. Okay. I don't know who the irregular person is in your life, and it's not my business to know. But so often, they are there, and they are destroying us little by little. I want to tell you about healing now. I want to tell you because I've still got my irregular person. He's still vital in my life, and I have a fantasy about him. The fantasy is this. He calls me and he says, Joyce, honey, I want to talk about the past. And I say, okay, what do you want to say? And he says to me, Joyce, it's really been revealed to me that I really abandoned you and some others. That I was never there when you needed me. That I have never said I love you. That I have told other people that I'm proud of you, but I've never looked at you and said that. And I've never read your books. Never talked to you about writing. Never asked you how it's going. I've been critical of your work. I've never understood why you do all that running around. And I want you to know, I'm sorry for the wasted years. Will you forgive me? And I say, yes, dear, it's all been done.
And then we talk a little bit, and then he ends by saying, I really, truly love you. But it's a fantasy. It probably won't happen now because my irregular person is going into probably arteriosclerosis and hardening of the arteries and being very forgetful, showing all the signs of hardening of the arteries. He's beginning to live in his own little world. He remembers everything as he wants to remember it. So I'm probably never going to get that phone call. You might not either. So how do you heal? How do you get rid of all of the darts that have poisons on the tip? How do you get rid of all of those? Let me tell you, it's not easy. It's difficult. And you're going to really hate me when I say this first thing. The four things that you can do, but you have the choice if you want to. The first thing is, before I tell you the first thing, I want you to focus in on your person. I just happened to remember that a woman that was at that pastor's wife's conference told me that her father-in-law was her irregular person because of the way he was to her husband. There were two boys in the family. Both of them are ministers. One is a minister. Her husband is a minister of a great, great church in the States. And his brother is a missionary to South America. And the father is a minister, too. Her father-in-law is a minister, too. And at last Christmas, before they were just about to eat the Christmas dinner, the father prayed the big Christmas prayer for the whole table and the whole family. The son that was in South America as a missionary was still there, and his wife. And so the father prayed about Christmas and about dinner and everything else. And then he said, and Lord, there's my son, Bob, out there in South America serving you. Oh, pouring out his life blood for you. Oh, Lord, bless him on this Christmas day. Courage his heart, Lord. And there's his wife, Hazel. Oh, my. She's so wonderful, his co-labor, his wonderful, wonderful wife. He goes on and on and on. And then he says, and then there's my son, Charlie. And Charlie's sitting right here, and he's the pastor of a huge church in California. Charlie and his wife sitting right here. And he says, and then there's my son, Charlie. Man, he's climbing up Fool's Hill all the time. And he goes right on with the prayer. He prayed for his son, and he prayed for his other son. How do you handle that? She said she reached over and she touched her husband's hand, and she looked at him, and he just went like that. Just shook his head. Okay, focus in on the person that you have in your life that fits these qualities. And then, number one, You're going to hate me. You're not going to like me. But I want you to try and thank God for this person. Now, the first time I tried this, it didn't work. I had to work into this very slowly. But I turned a corner one day when a woman in my Bible study came up to me, and I had talked about the irregular person, and she came up and she guessed who my irregular person was, and she called him by name, and she said to me, Joyce, I thank God for your irregular person. And I said, really? Go right ahead. Easy for you to say. And she said, no, you know why? Because you could never reach me in a million years with my irregular person had it not been for your irregular person. How right. Paul says to the Corinthians, why are you suffering? You are suffering so that you may help others when they suffer. Oh, those are powerful words. Without my irregular person, I would never know what you were talking about if you came to me and told me that you cried every night for your dad's approval. If you told me that your father said about you, he's climbing up Fool's Hill. If your mother said to you, I've got the best enchilada recipe in the world. I would never understand that. I would say that was just a fluke. Didn't happen very often. Instead, I know it happens with regularity, and it is not confined to the secular world. I don't even hardly deal with people in the secular world, except on airplanes. I deal with Christians, and I hear these stories from Christians, and like the pastor's wife who said, my irregular person is my pastor husband, sweet and kind to the congregation, but never gives me a gift, no compliments whatsoever. And this woman handed me the letter, and I looked at her, and she was a beautiful woman in her 50s. She wasn't an unattractive person or someone who'd let herself go. She was very, very lovely. Thank God for this person. Joseph was put into irons, do you remember, when he went to prison? That probably means shackles on the ankles, shackles around the neck, and shackles around the wrists. And Isaiah says, Joseph was put into irons, and F.B. Meyer, who wrote a beautiful book on Joseph that I used for research, said, at the same time, iron entered into Joseph. My irregular person has been my making, and I haven't liked it, and I haven't understood it, and I will never know why he is like this. But that's what happened in my life. And I have thanked God for this person. Secondly, give God permission to do whatever he needs to do in your life. That's a tough one too. It dawned on me that nobody crippled my ministry more than my irregular person. One word, one sentence, and I doubted my ministry. I doubted my abilities. I doubted my talents. I doubted that I could write it all. Especially when he told me what a great, great, great writer Johnny Erickson is. Now, I love Johnny with all of my heart, but he made me doubt any kind of a ministry that I might have in writing. Satan used this person to forge into me the seeds of doubt and confusion and everything else. When I decided to give God permission to do whatever he needs to do, I began to accept this person in my life as something God was doing. And God did a neat thing. He revived my sense of humor about this person. And when this person comes to see me, I know he is not going to ask me about my books. I know he is only going to talk about the book that he's been writing for just years and years and years and years and years and years. One book. He's just been writing it for years and years and years. And I know he's going to do it. So when he comes to my front door, I don't wait to have him hurt me by saying, let me tell you about my book. I open the door and I say, tell me about your book. And it's fun. I wait for his critical remarks about my dinners. Because I know that if we've got 14 people at the table, 13 will tell me how absolutely magnificent my dinner is, how beautiful my table is, what the flowers look like, and how did I did this roast. And we'll get down, and everybody will talk about the roast. What kind of a cut is it? How did you do it? How did you get it to taste like that? What kind of a pan did you use to cook it in? It is absolutely good. It gets down here to this one, and he says to me, I think it needs hot sauce. And it makes me laugh. And God restores my sense of humor. He couldn't react in any other way, because he's blind, he's deaf, he's all those things, he's handicapped. Thirdly, check out what you really believe. Now see, my fantasy is that someday he'll call me, and I could believe that with all my heart, but something says don't do that. It's a waste. So what do I believe? I don't believe that we're going to be reconciled. I don't believe that a loving confrontation will ever happen. I don't believe I will ever hear him say, I don't believe any of that. What do I believe? I believe that God knows what he is doing. Now see, I can hang on to that. I can get up in the morning and have the pain hit me. Oh, by the way, TMJ is temporomandibular joint stress dysfunction. And that's why we always call it TMJ. It's a dysfunction of the jaw joint, okay? I'll talk to you more about that tomorrow. I could get up
and not have any pain, then have the pain hit, so I can't get up and say, believe I am not going to have any pain. Because that might happen. But I can get up very well and say, I believe God knows what he is doing. And I can handle that. I can hang on to that. I can run with that. I can even be sick with that. I can even hurt with that. I can even hear the way my irregular person treats another person. And it hurts so badly, but I can stand it because I believe God knows what he's doing. And lastly, it's a prayer. And it's only one line or so. And it's, Lord, don't let me be an irregular person to anyone else in the world. Help me to learn from this. You can either use your childhood and your irregular person as the biggest stumbling block in the world, or you can learn to use it to learn on. Lord, don't let me be an irregular person to anybody else in the world. When I was speaking to that women's conference of pastors' wives way in the back row, a young woman was sitting, and she came to me afterwards and told me the story, and her mother came with me. They're both pastors' wives. She was sitting next to her mother, and she was thinking, I am sitting next to my irregular person. And she was saying, I wonder what she's thinking. I wonder if I would be able to say, Mother, you are my irregular person. Mother, let's do something about it. Let's not let this happen. And she said, I was sitting there just dying inside, and all of a sudden my mother leaned over and she said, my mother was my irregular person. And I sense that I am your irregular person. And she looked back at her mother and she said, yes, you are. And her mother said, let's not let this happen. Let's give this to God right now. Let's thank each other. I'll thank him for my mother. You try and thank him for me. You give God permission to do whatever he wants, and I'll give him permission. You hang on with me. You work this out with me. Because I don't want to be your irregular person anymore. There is hope. There really is. But if that never happens, learn from it. Understand from it. Dear Lord, my irregular person in California right now, Lord, I thank you for him. I have never understood him. I have wept thousands of tears over him. I have been hurt and wounded and mutilated by him, but I thank you for him because I know about the love and the mercy of God. Oh, Lord, I've looked into the faces of these women. I have shook their heads, yes, yes, yes. I am that kind of person. Some have been crying so hard they have been unable to look at me, and I hurt with them. Father, would you help them to pull out the darts that have been thrown at them through the years, and then give them the courage to go in there and wipe out the wound, cleanse it with a disinfectant of some kind, get the bitterness out of that, and then bind up, help them bind up those wounds, bandage them up for them, and then put them on the road to healing. As sure as one wound is healed, then another dart comes and we start the procedure all over again, Lord. So, Father, give us courage. Give us an understanding that I believe you know what you are doing. And then, Father, wherever it's possible, help us to reunite with this person. Help us to have the ministry of reconciliation whenever this is possible. Dear Jesus, we feel relieved to know that others have suffered this way. Help us not to become bitter, antagonistic, and angry. Help us, Lord, to thank you, give you permission
to know what we believe and then not to be the irregular person in anyone else's life, dear Jesus. And we thank you for the healing that is going on in the hearts of women right now, right here. In Jesus' name, amen. I want just for 1 second to tell you that just a little bit later on, there will be in the, I believe it's in the dining hall, a communion service. And that's a very special time for believers. That's a very special time for those of you who really know the Lord. It occurs to me that maybe some of you have never made a commitment to Christ. And before you take communion, you really want to be sure about that commitment. You really want to get that straight between you and the Lord. Must be a commitment between you and the Lord to really know the fullness of sharing in the elements. So I'm going to ask you to bow your heads once more, right now. And I'm going to say to you that I am not a lady preacher, and I don't give altar calls, and there will be no singing of an altar call hymn. But I know, and you know, that God is working. If you have never asked the Lord into your heart, this is the moment. This is the moment to say, Jesus, forgive me of my sins, come into my life, and make me the person you want me to be. Now, right now, because we're not going to take any time at all, if you just prayed that prayer, if you just now want to ask Christ into your life, I want you to do one simple thing, and that is to look up and look at me. And I'll watch for you and wait until you see that I see you. And it's very hard to see in the back there. Are you looking at me? Okay. Are you? All right. Are you? Okay. Okay, it's taking me a while because there's so many of you and it's hard to see. But are you? Yes. I don't want to miss anybody. You? Thank you, honey. Okay. Back there, I see you. Okay. You? Old, young, middle-aged. Okay. Thank you, Jesus. Lord, if I miss somebody, you saw them. Now, Lord, I would ask you to give them the courage to say to maybe somebody they came with, or some friend, or one of the staff members of Virginia, I ask Christ into my heart. Give them the courage, because there is a verse that says, if you do not confess me before the Father, I will not confess you before. If you do not confess me before men, I will not confess you before the Father. And Jesus is saying this. I want you to enjoy communion tonight. It will be your first communion. It will be a special communion. Now, for those of you who have come to a real turning point, a real change point in your life, if you want to rededicate your life tonight, this is a beautiful place and this is a marvelous time to do that. Will you look up at me? Will you say by the raising of your head and looking up at me, this is what I have done tonight. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So many of you, so many of you. Praise God. Okay, thank you, back there. Mm-hmm. There, in front of you. Right. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, I'm getting waved at. I'm getting smiled at. Oh, praise you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. I know we don't have time and the sound man may not be set up, but can I have that mic on, please? He knew me then. He knows me now. Died for me.
While you're still standing, some of you, I would like to ask the prayer counselors to come forward. This has been a beautiful time together, and I thank you, Joyce, for sharing your pain. And for being so transparent. I feel that the Holy Spirit has moved in a beautiful way tonight. And that's why I've asked the prayer counselors to come. All of you who looked to Joyce when she asked if you would make that commitment, we want to pray with some of you. And we want to share some things with you. We have material that we'd like to give you to read. And so, when we're dismissed, if those of you who have made this commitment will come, these beautiful gals up here can go with you into the prayer room or pray with you out here in the chapel as the others leave. And we're just thrilled at what has happened tonight in the hearts of so many. And that's for both, for those who've made the first-time commitment or for those who have rededicated. For the rest of you, go on over to the Dining Commons. We have Melba has refreshments planned. There will be 4 stations. As you enter the Dining Commons, there will be 2 stations at the opposite end of the dining room and then 2 at the front. But please move on over to the 2 other stations. And Marilee Keller is going to sing for us there and give a little concert. And you can go ahead with that while some of us stay behind. And then, after all of us are there, we'll go ahead with communion. Let's not worry about the time tonight, but let's be sensitive to the leading of the Holy Spirit. So, stand and we'll be dismissed. And those of you come who would like to talk or pray,